A few weeks ago, I was looking ahead to this Sunday when the band returns to lead the music, and I asked Inga what she was planning to preach on. She said it would be about centering, being in the moment, discovering what is really important. Of course, we know that if you want to make God laugh, tell God your plans. Because she called me yesterday morning. I was having a nice breakfast over here at First Watch, and she told me of her unrelenting stomach flu and asked if I could pull something together for the sermon time, and it occurred to me she probably wished that she could find a way to not be in that moment. Of course, I said I would do it. I'd relieve her at least of the anxiety of preparing a sermon. Well, the scripture reading is a concise and confusing tale of two sisters, one diligent, the other devoted. At least that's the nice way of putting it. Depending on your point of view, you might call Martha responsible and Mary a slacker. Churches are full of Marthas. We would not exist or get anything done if, you know, Martha was not in the job description of anybody joining the church. I mean, how many of you are going to admit to being a Mary? Very easy to sympathize with Martha. After all, you know, you just can't properly entertain a guest, especially one as revered as Jesus, without a lot of work. My grandmother, my maternal grandmother, was a Martha. She was a wonderful hostess, full of hospitality, delighted in entertaining huge crowds at family gatherings, and she had a very loose definition of family. And while the food was always amazing, my strongest memory of her is that she never sat down. Either she was in the kitchen getting more food, or she was circling the table, making sure everyone was amply fed. She would sneak up behind you with a bowl of something, and she would ask, "Would you like plop some more?" I wondered, would the afternoon have ever been a success without her and her constant motion? And we never had a chance to find out. Now, Mary takes a lot of flack, right? Especially from her sister. I mean, how can you just sit there listening when there's just so much to do? I've known more than one person who thinks that either Jesus was not always right, or else something got lost in the translation, because where would the world be if everyone was like Mary? Lazy does not accomplish much. We Americans commonly feel a bit defensive about this. We're very quick to stand up for Martha. After all, hard work, planning, diligence have made us what we are. 50 years ago, they got us to the moon and back, right? It may even explain some of the resentment that many feel about bestowing rewards on the undeserving, like a path to citizenship or food stamps, ignoring the fact that the average age of a beneficiary of food stamps is 9. Even putting all that aside, good manners just dictate that the needs of a guest should be attended to, especially one as important as Jesus. I love my grandmother, and I do find much to sympathize with Martha. You know, I mean, my wife and I, and she would admit this, are not the most diligent of housekeepers. We can let dust bunnies gather, and we can misplace mops and vacuum cleaner for weeks without being overly concerned about it. We resonate with the late Irma Bombeck, who said her tombstone would read, "Big deal, I'm used to dust." So we know that we need occasionally, maybe regularly, to invite people over. Otherwise, we'd never clean the house. "Thanks for coming," we say. "You saved us from condemnation by the local health authorities." Look at it this way. If Jesus was coming to your house as a dinner guest, I mean, wouldn't you want everything to be perfect? Go the extra mile. Prepare your best dishes. Bring out the china and the silver. Polish it up. Make sure the place had no spot of dust, no smudges on the windows. And then you'd expect maybe a bit of praise from him for your efforts. "Well done, good and faithful servant." But that is not what happens here in this story. Jesus notes that Martha is distracted by much serving and praises Mary, who just simply sat there at his feet listening, taking it all in, for having chosen the better portion. She seems a lot like the birds of the air or the lilies of the field, who take no thought for tomorrow, simply enjoy life. And who wouldn't like to be like that? But, you know, who has the time? And has anyone ever received a job performance evaluation that read, "His great strength is that he models a quiet, considered, calm, centered, even spiritual behavior. I doubt it. And yet it is Mary sitting at Jesus' feet whom Jesus commends, and that is shocking not only to us but to Luke's readers, given that Mary was doing something that women in that era just could not do. You know, it hasn't even been that long since women in this country had equal access to education, and in some places in the world it is not just frowned upon but forbidden, like parts of Africa and Pakistan, and I'm told a couple of counties in Alabama. I've said many times, though, that a healthy life and a good life is a balanced life, taking in, giving out, working, playing. A few weeks ago, I said most of my sermons exhorted action, suggesting, I suppose, a bit faithlessly that God has no hands but ours, and unless we do God's work, it just isn't going to get done. But guess what? The sun rose today. Didn't have much to do with it. But I also urged in my sermons occasionally quiet reflection and learning and recreation, and I did model this by taking frequent vacations. But there is a rhythm to life. The only problem is that's not exactly what Jesus says in this story. He rebukes Martha. He praises Mary. He doesn't say, you know what, you're both right. Your role, Martha, is to serve and to work, and you, Mary, are right to sit here on your tush and listen. He told Martha that actually she didn't need to do all the things she was doing, and she didn't need to be so busy. And he told Mary that she had her priorities right in the moment. One way I understand this is to remember that earlier in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Now, I don't understand pure in heart as being, you know, morally superior or goody-two-shoes or something like that. I like it the way Kierkegaard said it. He said, purity of heart is to will one thing. Just be focused. And maybe you will see God. Paul Tillich once used this story as a springboard for a sermon he called Our Ultimate Concern. In the face of those who are concerned about nothing, he said, Mary and Martha are concerned, but represent different types of concern. Martha, he said, is concerned about many things, but all of them finite, preliminary, and transitory. Mary is concerned about one thing, which is infinite, ultimate, and lasting, pure of heart, willing one thing. Martha's concern with serving her guest, preparing his meal, making him comfortable, as commendable as that is not ultimately important. Mary's concern with listening to a man who had just set his face toward Jerusalem, and all that means, that is ultimate. She's doing more than just sitting at his feet, more than just listening, more than recreating herself for some future time of serving. She's touching and she is being touched by the ultimate, the infinite, the eternal. That is the big thing that is needed. That's the one thing that cannot be taken away. Because she grasps this ultimate concern and it grasps her, all other concerns are seen in a different light. Priorities fall into place, anxiety disappears, and cannot control her. She knows the peace of God at the center of her life and being. That is what mindfulness can bring. Of course, we're all concerned about many things, and if we weren't, I guess not much would get done in our families or our church or our world. But when we understand the message of this story, the message Jesus gives when he praises Mary, we begin to see all of these concerns in light of the ultimate concern. And we will all at some point lose the objects of our concerns in the cycle of birth and death and resurrection. Yet we can still choose the good portion, the one thing that cannot be taken away, for there's something that cannot be destroyed no matter what. Call it faith, call it eternity, call it love, call it God, call it knowing who you are and whose you are. When you come to know what's really important in life, when you grasp it and it grasps you, then that can never, never be taken away. We just returned from several days in California visiting our grandchildren. case you don't want to take my word, that they are the most adorable, cute, amazing 2- and 5-year-olds who have ever existed on this planet, I will be happy to show you the pictures and the videos right after the service. But you know what? I didn't take as many pictures as I would have liked to, because I realized that my cell phone, which doubles as a camera and many other things, can be a huge distraction. You know, we have laws against distracted driving. We don't have any laws against distracted grandparenting. It's kind of its own punishment, I guess. And if I kept that phone near me all the time, I'd be tempted to check email and messages and Facebook and news and weather. And then we actually had an earthquake there, so I was looking up the earthquake statistics and reports. But, you know, kind of like I do when I'm dining in a restaurant with my wife. Not really. She won't let me do that. But if I didn't take this device into the other room and hide it under the pillow, my concerns, you see, would not have been as ultimate as I got to experience. You see, I only had 3 days with them. While there, they were by far the most important thing, the most ultimate thing in my life. I had to be here now, in the words of Inga's sermon title. If I could do it then, maybe I can learn to do it in all of my nows. Live in the moment, which is, after all, eternity. And so to revisit those words of David White by which we began, enough. These few words are enough. If not these words, this breath. If not this breath, this sitting here. This opening to life we have refused again and again, until now. Until now, may it be so. Amen. And now it's your turn to add anything you'd like to add to this. What's your ultimate? What distracts you? What is? We'll get number two. Number one over here.
My name is Minta, and I just really like this story as a late 50s woman, because I feel very strongly that there's a liberation from this cultural expectation that a woman's place is to be the servant as opposed to the person who enjoys the message. And I do feel there's a very strong gender expectation that really speaks to me in this.
Yeah, like a liberation from that.
I'm Kathy, and the sermon changed my mind when I heard the text. And Martha complained to Jesus, and he said Mary was right. I could picture Martha going, just like a man. But I listened to the sermon, and I got a better view.
Thank you. I did think maybe the sermon should have been preached by a woman, because I didn't want to mansplain it to all of you. But
I'm Dean, and I just wanted to thank you for defending Martha, because... yeah, there's a lot of Martha in me. and I think that, you know, in terms of, it's not just the what they produce, but the feelings that the people will carry in terms of having been welcomed.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. Thanks.
Judy, you mentioned consider the lilies of the field, and I'm thinking, yeah, but they don't have to pay property taxes.
Yeah.